Track 2. Hello and welcome to the news recorded on Wednesday, the 11th of October 2017. I'm Sue.
I'm Louise.
And I'm Margaret.
And John is your sound engineer this week. We would like to say a very big thank you to Joan Simmons and Olive Robbins for their contribution towards the funding of our Talking News magazine. These really count towards the costs of running the Talking Newspaper magazine. So once again, thank you very much. And now Louise will start us off with the news.
An MP has claimed residents across Warsaw are at breaking point as she prepares to take the borough's travellers' plight to Parliament. Having successfully called for a parliamentary debate on the issue of unauthorised traveller encampments, which will take place next week, Aldridge Brownhill's MP Wendy Morton has hit out at travellers who act above the law. The MP will call for the government to strengthen the laws that help councils tackle unauthorised camps. She said, "It's time to strengthen the law to stop these encampments appearing in the first place, toughen up the punishment for those that so flagrantly break the law, and ensure that government and local authorities come together with the police and the travelling community to find an approach that works for everyone." A recent encampment caused residents and leisure groups to stay away from Aldridge Airport. Sadly, it feels as though unauthorised encampments are now part and parcel of summer life and so many of our open spaces. In the trail is a massive mess and waste, garden, household, industrial and even at times human waste. Too often this is coupled with an increase in crime and antisocial behaviour and increased tension within our communities. She said, "Many of these are luxury caravans and cars that so many hard-working families can only dream of affording. No longer is this the roaming workforce of yesteryear, travelling from town to town and to find work and pay their way. They are large groups of travellers who arrive for months on end on an all-encompassing tour. The right to lead a travelling lifestyle is an important one and must be respected. But the travelling community, whom are very fond of reminding us of those rights, must begin to learn that with rights comes responsibilities." Drone pictures have captured the true scale of some recent encampments, which have seen more than 40 caravans. No single community should ever be above the law, and the right to leave a travelling lifestyle should not equal the right to break the law. The MP added, "Just before the council serve their order, the encampment packs up and moves on, only for the same process to repeat itself, often just a few yards down the road in the same borough. All too often it becomes a game of cat and mouse, which comes at a great cost to all hard-pressed taxpayers. This has to come to an end. Enough is enough."
A learner driver over the limit who was speeding when another car plunged into a wall claimed he was not responsible for the fatal smash. Joseph Chance recalled the moment he looked in his Renault Clio's rearview mirror and spotted his friend's Ford Focus skid before crashing on the dark, wet morning. Former Dudley College student Nadine Foster, who was a front seat passenger in Dylan Stringer's Ford Focus, was left with serious injuries and later died. Wearing an untucked grey shirt, trousers and black tie, Chance took the stand at Wolverhampton Crown Court to claim he did not cause Stringer's car to hurtle into the wall. He told a jury of 7 men and 5 women the pair were not racing each other along Old Swinford's Hagley Road, but accepted they were just speeding on their journey home. The defendant described being left shocked after seeing the overturned car following the crash and rushed to the scene, trying to unsuccessfully push the vehicle back upright. He went on to confess he became aggressive when passers-by filmed the scenes of the smash as he tried to help injured 18-year-old mother Miss Foster. Giving evidence on Thursday, Chance admitted he was being immature when he flouted the road's speed limit, but maintained the men had not planned to race each other. He added, "I helped get her out of the car. I took my own top off and put it over her to cover her up." The prosecution alleged Chance contributed to Miss Foster's death, as both men should have realised driving at speeds reaching almost 80 miles an hour could have led to the fatal smash. During cross-examination, prosecutor Mr. Paul Spratt put it to the 25-year-old defendant that he had encouraged Stringer to speed along the road. Chance, who accepted Stringer was mirroring his driving, but denied he influenced his co-defendant, said, "I didn't make him follow me. He has got his own mind." During the trial, jurors were told the men were with Miss Foster and another woman at Starbridge's Chicago Rock Cafe, where they had been drinking before leaving in the early hours of the morning. Miss Foster, who also studied at Sturbridge Pedmore Technology College, died in hospital 10 days after the April the 16th crash. The court was told Stringer of Wychbury Road, Sturbridge, previously admitted causing the death of Miss Foster by driving dangerously. Chance of Mercroft Avenue admitted dangerous driving at an earlier hearing, but denies causing the death by dangerous driving. The trial continues.
Aaron Barley has been given a 30-year life sentence for the brutal murders of a Starbridge mum and son. The 24-year-old homeless man was given life for the horrific killings of mother of two, Trelsey Wilkinson, and her 13-year-old son, Pierce, at their Greyhound Lane home on March the 30th this year. Mrs. Justice Carr, sitting at Birmingham Crown Court, said taking into consideration time spent on remand, he would spend a minimum of 29 years and 178 days in prison before being considered for parole. The judge said there had been a significant degree of planning and premeditation, particularly in the case of the attempted murder of company director Mr. Wilkinson, aged 47. She said Barley had shown no remorse. Indeed, you knew that you were destroying the family. It's what you intended. Barley, of no fixed address, had been lying in wait in the back garden of the family's detached Greyhound Lane home before launching the murderous morning attack on Tracy and 13-year-old Pierce. Mrs. Justice Carr told him, "You clearly represent a very significant risk of serious harm to members of the public." She said Barley may never be released from prison, and if he ever was, he would remain on license for the rest of his life. "I wish we had never met him, and I wish my wife had never set eyes on him," Peter Wilkinson told reporters covering the Aaron Barley case. Company director Mr. Wilkinson paid a moving tribute to his wife, Tracy, who, along with son Pierce, was fatally stabbed by Barley at the family's Norton home on March the 30th as he was out walking a dog. Mr. Wilkinson said he and Tracy had been helping Barley to try and get back on his feet, finding him a job, helping him to secure accommodation, and they even had him over for Christmas dinner. He said Tracy had met Barley one day after shopping at Tesco in Starbridge, and he added, "Aaron was keeping warm in a cardboard box, and she was taken aback by this and decided off the cuff that she wanted to help him. So she took him in her car to Dudley Council to get help. And from that point, he lived in a hostel for a few days, organised by my wife." That was March 2016. Things developed from there.
A woman who was mauled by a pig has said she feared she was going to be killed during the terrifying attack. Marie Yates has undergone an operation at the hospital after she was charged by the animal. The savage attack in her back garden in Darlaston left Marie fearing for her life. She remains in hospital with painful injuries to both legs. The 61-year-old carer suffered an 8-inch long and 2-inch deep gash on her right leg and also damage to the left. The terrifying attack in Heathfield Lane on Wednesday morning left flesh hanging off one of Miss Yates' legs. She said, "I was in bed reading my book when I heard a commotion. I knew the pig had started to smash through a fence panel but didn't think it could get through. But somehow it did, and smashed into my little tool shed and was eating some of my plants. Perhaps naively, I thought I could shoo it back to its pen with a broom, so I went out to try to do that, but he charged at me. He's a great big thing, and he ripped the front of my leg. I was screaming and trying to get away. I thought, I could get killed here, and tried to run away, and then he got the back of my leg as well. Marie escaped onto the street and was tracked by the pig, which made its way out into the road. The pig was recovered by its owner and taken back to its home." Marie added, The pig charged so fast there was no chance I could have got out of the way. One of my neighbours was in his garden and I shouted over to him that the pig was attacking me and I was bleeding badly. It's a bit blurry, but I managed to get out to my car, which is parked to the back, and then I got out into the road. But the pig followed me out into the roadway. The extent of Marie's injuries means she has faced a spell in hospital and has been operated on, but she remains under supervision in case her wounds get infected. Marie, who is her mother Margaret's carer, says she is still in pain after the attack, but suggested if the pig had attacked a child, then it could have been deadly. She said, "There's a school around the corner and every day you have mums walking their children to school and walking around with their babies. If there had been a child, I think it would have been killed." The pig, called Hammy, was finally collared by its owner and returned to the shed where it is kept. Experts believe it is a Gloucester Old Sport breed and Marie suggested it weighs about 30 stone.
A man who claimed he could barely walk has been convicted of more than £21,000 benefit fraud. Stephen Mountford from Milton Street, Briley Hill, was caught by investigators from the Department of Works and Pensions, walking his grandchildren to and from school. Footage emerged of the 53-year-old strolling along the roads in the area without his walking aids. The court heard how he had been claiming disability living allowance between October the 16th, 2010 and May the 3rd, 2016. However, in 2015, he underwent medical treatment at Dudley Guest Hospital, allowing him to exercise more and walk unaided without informing the DWP. He racked up an overpayment of £21,900. Mountford had originally been in receipt of the benefits for severe mobility issues, including osteoarthritis. He pleaded guilty to dishonestly failing to inform the DWP about this change in circumstances. Mrs. Kelly Crow, prosecuting, said he had claimed disability living allowance that he was not entitled to claim between a set period. He failed to declare that his physical ability had improved and that he could walk after all. Dudley magistrates heard how Mountford had been taking his grandchildren to a school over a distance of 1.2 miles twice a day when his car was out of action. He had no previous convictions and also suffered from depression and spondylitis. Mr. Adil Khan, defending, said, "This was a legible claim in the first instance because he was seen walking his grandchildren to school did not mean that he did not have a disability. There was no evidence that suggested that he had been seen walking unaided since 2010. It was only for a short period in 2015 when he was getting better. His wife is now working and he's no longer claiming any benefits. They are paying around £50 a month back to the DWP since February this year." Mountford was given a 24-week suspended sentence alongside a rehabilitation order. He was also told to pay £100 in court costs and a victim surcharge of £115. Jackie Hughes, chair of the bench, said, "The seriousness of this offence does cross the custody threshold due to the amount of money and the length of time it involved."
Stourbridge's last bus conductor, Jerry Byrne, celebrated his 100th birthday on October the 5th. Originally from County Limerick, Jerry came to Stourbridge in 1943 and worked in a reserved occupation before joining Midland Red in 1948 as a bus conductor, where he remained until 1979. When he retired, he was the last serving bus conductor and was the guest of honour at the opening of the Stourbridge interchange in 2012. Jerry later went on to work at Mecco Bingo on Hagley Road, where he worked until he retired, aged 74. Jerry lived in Market Street when first arriving in Stourbridge and moved to St George's Road in Norton in 1952, where he has remained ever since. He married Dorothy Behan in 1947 and they went on to have eight children. Eldest son Peter recalled, "We didn't see a great deal of Dad at home because of long hours and split shifts, but he'd often be our conductor as we journeyed to and fro. And even on his annual leave, he'd end up doing gardening jobs." Jerry added, "I can remember working on the bus to Wolverhampton one day when one of the drivers got on. He hadn't got any money on him, so I said, 'That's all right, go upstairs.' As luck would have it, an inspector then got on the bus, and I had to tell him there was a passenger upstairs without a ticket because he'd got no money and I didn't want to leave him standing at the bus stop. The inspector told me to take his name and address and that he was to pay the money for his fare the next time he was passing the bus station. You wouldn't get that happening now." Jerry still maintains his great passion for horse racing and follows it avidly, his own father having worked at a stud farm back in Knockaney. A special mass was held at Our Lady in All Saints Church, New Road, Stourbridge, and it was followed by a birthday party for family and friends on October 7th. Peter said there were so many people we could have invited, but there simply wasn't enough room, as most guests are family. Apart from 8 children, Jerry also has 11 grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren. It was quite a party.
Morgan Bridgens didn't think twice when he saw his friend fall into the canal. By the time he got to 5-year-old William Smith, he had gone under the water and could have drowned if it had not been for his actions. Today, 10-year-old Morgan described how he managed to pull William to safety from the Black Country Canal just in time. His mother, Carly Smart, said she was immensely proud of her son's life-saving actions. The drama happened as the pair were playing on a rope swing on the banks of Stourbridge Canal off Longboat Lane in Wordsley. After the rope swing broke, William wandered off to get another stick with the hope of fixing it. But Morgan suddenly heard a big splash and went running down a set of steps to where the noise came from. When he got to the bottom, he saw Will in the water and was sinking underneath the surface. Morgan got onto his stomach on the canal path, outstretched his arms and pulled his friend out of the canal. Carly, 30, a mother of 3 from Wesley, said, "Morgan panicked at first and didn't know what to do. He told me, 'I had to get him out, Mum.' He saw Will go under 2 or 3 times. When Will went under again, Morgan got him by the arms and pulled him out. I didn't know what had happened when Morgan came back home. Morgan sat there all quiet and I knew something was wrong. When he told me I was hysterical, I said, 'Have you got him out?' and said Will had gone back to his house. I went down to Will's mum straight away. They only live a few doors down. Will was a bit shook up, but he was fine. He was recovering and was in the bath." Morgan and William both attend Brook Primary in Wordsley. Carly's youngest son, Rio, 5, is in William's class, which is how the boys know each other. Carly added, "I'm really proud of Morgan. He has received lots of praise for his actions and it has opened up his eyes." She said the drama happened at the end of the summer holidays and Carly said she wanted to highlight what happened as a warning to parents about the dangers of the canals that crisscross the Black Country. She said, "William's parents are really grateful. We are just so proud that Morgan acted quickly." Brook Primary School head teacher Jan Baker, "I am very proud of him. The whole school is. He thought really carefully about what he did. He wasn't rash. He was very sensible. He kept his head and didn't panic. He acted like someone who was much older," she said.
Sir David Attenborough has topped a list of ethical champions Britons want to feature on the new £20 note. The veteran broadcaster outstripped his next closest rival, Prince Charles, who came in second place with just 7% of support. Research conducted by YouGov on behalf of Good Money Week showed 40% of 2,128 people asked Sir David was their first choice, ahead of other ethical-minded figureheads, including Richard Branson, Stella McCartney and Jamie Oliver. The veteran broadcaster outstripped his closest rival, Prince Charles, who came in second place with just 7% of support. Harry Potter novelist J.K. Rowling, earned the approval of 4% of those asked, while human rights activist Anita Roddick and Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, earned 3%, respectively. Just over a quarter, 27%, said they didn't know who to choose. The poll conducted in September asked participants to name an individual they most wanted to feature on the new banknote from a list of 15 ethical champions who would remind the public to be ethical in how they spend their money. A new version of the £20 note is due to come into circulation in 2020. Good Money Week runs between October the 8th and the 14th and promotes making ethical money choices in daily spending. Charlene Cranny, Programme Manager at the UK Sustainable Investment and Finance Association, said, "It's no surprise that Sir David Attenborough came out top in the poll. With his endless conservation work, he would act as a constant reminder to the public to make ethical money choices, which is what Good Money Week, now in its 10th year, aims to do. It's particularly important this year as the workplace pension comes into full force and millions of pounds could be chosen to be invested ethically if people were aware of their choices."
New figures show patients as young as 8 have been treated for conditions such as anorexia and bulimia across the region. Figures released under Freedom of Information show a total of 224 children have been referred to the NHS for eating disorders since 2014-15. The average waiting times for patients' first treatment sessions varied from about 4 weeks to under 2 weeks across the three trusts. A wait of 29 weeks by patient was initially noted by the Black Country Partnership NHS Foundation Trust, although this was later discovered to be an error. Wolverhampton Liberal Democrat campaigner Rob Quambi said, "I think it is a scandal that children are being denied prompt access to vital mental health services simply because of the postcode lottery. It is unforgivable that some patients have to wait more than 200 days for an appointment. We wouldn't expect a child to wait so long to be treated for a physical ailment. So why is it any different for eating disorders?" A spokesman for the Black Country Partnership HNS Foundation Trust said, "Our utmost priority is to provide high quality care that helps the people who use our services get better as quickly as possible. This remains our priority throughout their treatment. Having further explored the data shared as part of a Freedom of Information request, we have identified that there is an error regarding the patient wait of 29 weeks. Following the publication of Future in Mind by the Department of Health, the Trust has been working with our commissioning partners, Wolverhampton Clinical Commissioning Group, the CCG, and Sandwell and West Birmingham CCG, investing money to provide a dedicated under 19 years service for eating disorders. This welcome investment has led to new resources and developments which will benefit patients, families and carers. Combined with improved partnership working with GPs, these developments are helping to raise awareness of eating disorders and the support available to those who need it. This has led to an increase in people accessing this help." Dudley and Walsall Mental Health Partnership NHS Trust said, "The Child and Adolescent Mental Health Eating Disorders Service has very specific timescales attached to it. An urgent case will be seen within 1 week of referral and a routine case within 4. To date, these timescales have not been breached." And the South Staffordshire and Shropshire Healthcare NHS Foundation Trust said, "The team are passionate about the service and have done lots of work to promote it. The success of the service has been recognised by commissioners who are investing more, and more staff are being recruited."
A Black Country Speedway club could fold after the next two races over fears of finding a new stadium. Buses that are Cradley Heathens have hinted their time could be up as issues have arisen with the two clubs they share stadiums with. The Heathens, who compete in a national league, currently have no stadium of their own. They returned to racing in 2010 after closing 15 years earlier and currently hold races in Wolverhampton and Birmingham. But with new owners taking over Birmingham Brummies and more races set for Wolverhampton Wolves, the future of the Heathens has been cast into doubt. thousands of fans have flocked to support the reborn heathens. However, with no immediate prospect of a track to call their own next year, track sharing is once again the only option. Gary Patchett, who is the club's joint boss, said, "They were difficult this year, but we have pulled a rabbit out of the hat with the double headers, which have been reasonably successful. But running at Birmingham isn't much fun for the supporters. We are grateful for the fact that we were able to race there, but it's hard. And with the likelihood of new owners at Birmingham, then they could be running two teams there. We may be putting two and two together and coming up with five, but it may be that Perry Barr is not an option. Then we have the AGM to come, and from what I'm hearing, and with Lakeside looking to return to the Premiership, they may come up with a 10-team league and four more home fixtures for Wolves. That's four more Mondays we can't have. We might be scuppered." Club director Nigel Pearson has hinted he could leave the club in winter after 8 years in charge. Meanwhile, the uncertainty over stadium sharing. Patchett said next season's plans could be out of their hands. Their next two meetings could be the final ones. The first race at Wolverine's Moor Stadium against Eastbourne on October the 16th, and the club's fast to Golden Hammer competition event a week later. Craigley Heathens was founded in Dudley in 1947 and competed at the top level of British Speedway until 1995 when the team closed. But the team was revived in 2010 as Dudley Heathens and compete in the National League. In 2013, the club's name changed to Craigley Heathens.
A stinger ends dramatic Wolverhampton police chase as a drama unfolded in a quiet residential area of Bilston. The chase began as dozens of police cars were deployed along the A41 Bilston Road at around 2:40 p.m. on Saturday, the 7th of October. Passers-by reported seeing three or four unmarked police cars pursuing a car along the road. Police officers jumped out to divert a bus before placing a stinger, a spiked strip which punctures tyres, in the road on Stowheath Lane, just outside the city centre. Three more unmarked police cars and four patrol cars followed before a silver Citroen C4 coupe punctured its tyres as it spread along over the stinger, witnesses said. A woman was then removed from the vehicle and handcuffed before being taken to the back of the waiting police car. People travelling on the number 79 bus, which is currently being diverted down Stowheath Lane due to the ongoing roadworks on Bilston Road, reported seeing and hearing a police helicopter circling overhead. Police dogs were also on the scene as officers entered houses and back gardens along the road. Stowheath Lane resident David Evans, aged 55, was watching TV when the fleet of police cars arrived. "It all happened so fast. It was absolute chaos," Mr. Evans said. "I've never seen anything like it. I was with my 78-year-old mother and she was a bit frightened by it all. I was just sitting watching TV when the unmarked cars and the marked cars flew past. Then the police officers got out and stopped a bus along the road that acted as like a bit of a blockade. They took out a black case and from the boot of one of the cars, I was worried it might be a gun, but it was the stinger and they put it in the road. During the drama, traffic was at a standstill while police mounted the grass verges and blue lights flashed from inside the unmarked cars. Locals gathered on the front lawns to watch and youngsters on their bikes crowded around the punctured car as the police waited for it to be taken away. At around 3:30, a removal truck arrived and police officers controlled the traffic as the car was loaded onto the back of the truck and taken away. Speaking of the incident, Councillor Stephen Simpkins, Labour Councillor for Bilston East, said, "It must be fairly serious as the police have clearly deployed a lot of resources on this. I imagine that they will be calling on people who know anything to get in touch with them, and I suggest we leave it to the police and other professionals to deal with."
Maintenance reports into the state of the structure from which a wood panel flew off and fatally struck university worker Miss Tanny Martin were not based on a live inspection, a court heard. The inquest, which continued on Wednesday, heard how the plant room roof area and the two structures on top of that were not part of major reports looking into the upkeep of the Black Rock building, part of Wolverhampton's Mander Centre. One of the reports was also completed as a desktop exercise, meaning it was compiled from previous information gathered about the building and not the result of a fresh inspection. The piece of wood that struck and killed Miss Martin on February the 23rd this year was the covering of a redundant water tank on the top level roof, which became loose during Storm Doris and split in two. One half was blown onto the roof of the O2 shop in Dudley Street and the other fell to the ground in front of Starbucks. During the inquest, Andrew King, Associate Director of the Retail Asset Services for Cushman & Wakefield that managed the building, said he had never seen the structures on the roof during the two or three times he'd visited. He said, "I do not recall that ever being visible. When I climbed the vertical ladder to the roof, I turned along the parapet." It was revealed that neither the water tank structure or the nearby ventilation structure were included in the planned preventative maintenance reports of 2014 and 15. However, the reports did refer to void spaces and the roof on level 6 of the Black Rock building. The court heard how reports such as these are completed by building surveyors and are used as a checklist to carry out repairs within a time frame of up to 5 to 10 years. The reports include photographs of areas of concern. One photograph showed a rotting stairwell, which in the background showed one of the structures. And with that final news item, we'll now make way for this week's notices. So it's goodbye from Sue.
Goodbye from Louise.
And bye-bye from Margaret.
Goodbye, everybody.